is Jared and the GM on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Titans Monday. Titans win over Atlanta yesterday. A beautiful win. Thanks in large part to Marcus Mariota, who Floyd did not give a game ball to earlier today, which I could not believe. And again, it seems like, and Floyd, I know you're going to hate me for saying this, knock on wood, it seems like the Titans are coming out of these games relatively healthy. Now, we don't know about Cam Wake, but Floyd just turned on his microphone to then knock on wood and is now, I think, vehemently upset with me.
Knock on wood.
And so, but again, Buffalo looks, they may be without their starting quarterback on Sunday, so we'll keep up with that all throughout the week as he took a vicious helmet-to-helmet hit from Jonathan Jackson of the Patriots and got knocked out of that game and is questionable for Sunday. But it is time for Floyd's three things, three up, three down, three things he liked, three things he didn't from yesterday's win over Atlanta. We start with what should be relatively easy for Floyd today. Three up, we start with the best thing Floyd liked.
Number one.
I mean, these are all three good things, but I love the play of the secondary. I love the man-for-man coverage. I love their ability to challenge these because, again, if you watched our game, you may not be all that impressed with their group of receivers, but I'm here to tell you that, you know, they've got three receivers as good as any receivers in the league. And I thought that especially Butler, but the entire secondary did a great job on that group. And then the couple of times you could tell there were two, three, four times that they were just going to throw it down the field and they were going to turn into a jump ball and hopefully come up with it. And Byard, we kept a free safety a lot of the time. And Byard was over there knocking the ball down. I mean, it was just good, solid coverage. And against a group of receivers that I, to be honest, kind of doubted we were going to be able to do that with. But we did it. So congratulations to that group.
Well, and this is a team that on their schedule the rest of the year includes playing Keenan Allen. It includes Mike Evans in Tampa Bay. It includes Michael Thomas in New Orleans. It includes all those Kansas City guys whenever you got to play them. And they did a good job on T.Y. Hilton earlier this year as well. So that gives me some optimism. I mean, I look at a game like yesterday and how well they played, and I almost want to sit there and say, well, I don't need to hear any more excuses from Adoree Jackson if he can't cover his guy because the way he played yesterday. You know, that, like, no more excuses for those guys in other games because they played their butts off yesterday.
Number two.
Second thing for me is the pass protection and the pass protection more than just, okay, we didn't give up a sack, so pass protection must have been good. It was what they did and what we did. They were obviously going to keep Marcus in the pocket, which meant that the rushers were upfield, the tackles could stay upfield, but our center and two guards did an outstanding job of keeping that pocket clean so that Marcus could get back, he could get set, and then if he felt pressure, you knew it was going to be outside, he could step up into the pocket and with good timing get rid of the ball, complete the ball, and as we've seen, allow the receivers to run with the ball. So, I mean, I thought that, you know, a beleaguered, is that the right word?
Yes.
Offensive line was, kind of stepped up. And I'm sure, you know, part of that was the embarrassment that they got last week. But whoever did it, however did it, I'm not even sure who the right guard was. But, you know, whatever they did, it worked, and I was pleased about that.
Okay, and then the third thing you liked from yesterday.
Number three.
Third thing, and the thing that really, really helped us field position-wise was Kern and the punt team. I mean, the Kern and the punt team have gotten to the point that's that group, and I hate to keep bragging on them because we know what could happen at any point in time, but, I mean, they are about as in-tuned and oiled and, you know, performing as well as any punt team anywhere, and that goes for the coverage too. So that's I mean, it saved us field position, helped us field position. I mean, it was a gigantic benefit.
Marcus did not make the three things you liked.
Marcus, the result of what Marcus did was from the pass protection in the pocket.
I know, but, I mean, Marcus balled out. A.J. Brown didn't make the three things you liked.
And A.J. Brown was because of the pass protection in the pocket.
A.J. made, I mean, that touchdown run, the 55-yard one, that was a lot of A.J. I mean, I know that if Marcus doesn't have time to do it, then he's not going to be able to get the ball out, but it was exactly a slant, and A.J. took it to the house. I mean, A.J. is a freaking stud. All right, three down, three things you did not like. Let's start, of course, with number one.
Number one.
First thing, again, is our zone coverage. I mean, I just, and I know what they're doing. I understand what they're doing. And what they were doing was the right thing at the right time. But we have got to find a way to cover up a tight end now in zone coverage. I mean, the tight ends go to the Hall of Fame after we play them, and we get in a situation where we're going to play zone. And I forget what Hooper had. What did he have, 130 yards? Mm-hmm. I mean, we're just getting killed in those situations. And yet it didn't, you know, that didn't cost you the game. I understand that. You know, we got the ball back. We let them eat up the clock. I understand all that. But, man, oh, man, that's tough to watch. That's hard.
Well, the other thing, too, is it's one thing when it's Zach Ertz who does it to you. It's another thing when it's all of these tight ends who do it to you. I mean, in a hindsight, Freddie Kitchens is probably even dumber than we thought, because he could have just thrown the ball to Njoku on every play, and they probably would have won the game.
Yeah.
So I'm with you on the tight end factor there. I mean, it's just awful. Second thing you didn't like.
Number two.
Second thing was the ball is on the ground way too much. We did not lose a fumble. We have not had a turnover, but the ball is on the ground, primarily two people.
Marcus and Derek. And don't forget Corey Davis, although he didn't do it in this game, but he's been doing
but
it.
But those two guys for the last couple of weeks have put the ball on the ground, and we have gotten it back. Marcus, when he starts to scramble, when he takes off, he thinks he can just fling that ball around anywhere. And surprisingly for me is Derek. I mean, how many games has Derek carried a ball and not fumbled, not even had it on the ground? And it's been on the ground two or three times in the last week or two. So we have got to correct that. That is one of those things that, you know, you won't talk about, you won't think about, it won't be an issue until you go in and fumble twice and lose a game. Then all of a sudden it's, you know, wow, we got to really pay attention to fumbles. No kidding. So let's take care of that issue right now.
Well, and Derrick Henry's fumble, I had to say what bothered me, but Derrick Henry fumbles the ball out of bounds, and everyone gets up like, all right, yeah, it was fine. It just went out of bounds. Like, no, just because it went out of bounds doesn't mean it's fine. I mean, I'm with you on the Derrick fumble. The Marcus fumble, I mean, he took off scrambling, and at the same time he took off scrambling, the guy put a hat right on the ball or got his hand right on the ball. Like, that's a tough one.
No.
But Marcus fumbled the ball so much in his career that I don't give him the benefit of the doubt. And he almost fumbled on the play before.
He was carrying the ball away. I mean, it wasn't, you know, he didn't have it anywhere near where it needed to be.
Well, and he almost fumbled on the play before. And I was stunned. It was the non-pass interference that he talked them out of, because they said Derrick Henry was in the area. And so the official TV crew of the Tennessee Titans, Spiro Ditas and Adam Archuleta, they go, you know, let's bring in Gene Steratore. Gene tells us, well, you know, you give him a lot of leeway, and 82 and 22 are in the area. I'm like, Gene, how close is that to being a fumble? Because Marcus got up and was pointing the hand going forward, but I wasn't certain the hand was going forward. So they showed the replay, and Archuleta brought that up and said, hey, that's really close to a fumble. And, I mean, I'm all for not taking sacks. But if Marcus is going to fumble the ball to not take a sack, then I have a little bit of a problem with it. So I'm in total agreement with you on the fumbles. And the third thing you didn't like.
Number three.
And the third thing for me, which was kind of a, this is one of the things that used to aggravate me when I was a GM. But running the boots, Marcus running the boots into a defensive end that you had no chance doing it, and we did it three times. I mean, that just aggravates the heck out of me because it is too hard to get first downs. It's too hard to protect your quarterback. It's too hard to get a play call right than to, you know, waste two or three plays because we had no chance to get it. And it's not that I don't like the play. I mean, I do like the play, and there are going to be certain games where that play will be a must and will have to work. But this game was not going to be one of those. And so that's, you know, I think as a play caller, you got to realize that and kind of step back and say, okay, we got to find another plan to get him outside.
615-737-1025 is the phone number. By the way, guess who is calling the Titans-Bills game on Saturday or on Sunday for CBS?
I don't know.
Spiro Dinas and Adam Archuleta, the official television crew of the Tennessee Titans. Spiro Dinas and Adam Archuleta. I feel like I'm just used to those guys calling a Titans game now. Like, I'm just used to it. Like, if they have someone else call the game, I'm kind of shocked for a second. I'm like, wait a minute, someone else is calling the Titans game? Like when they got Nance and Romo that first week, I'm like, this is not right. Where's Spiro and Adam Archuleta? And it's funny because you can tell how much they've called the Titans because a lot of these national guys have no idea of anything about the Titans. They just read the game notes. And these guys are talking about, you know, the Titans have really struggled with this in the past. Like, yes, you know, because you call them every week.
Yeah, this would be. Yeah, I talked to Vrabes yesterday. And
they call them more than like Mike Keith. Like, they may catch Mike Keith in terms of the amount of games of the Titans they're going to call at some point. That's how much they call the Titans. 615-737-1025. We'll get to the phones. Plus, coming up next, have the Titans found something they have not had since the guy who hosts the morning show here was on their team? We'll get to that next. Jared and the GM, it's ESPN 1025, the game.
Derrick Henry on formation. And fake to him over the middle. It is caught. That's the rookie, A.J. Brown. He's still going. Brown showing the wheels to the 10, to the 5. And he's in for the touchdown. An electrifying catch and run, 55 yards to get Tennessee in front.
This team needed a spark, and you gave them one early with a couple of big plays. I mean, how was that able to happen, and how good does that make it feel?
I had a one-on-one matchup, and I had to win my matchup. And when I caught the ball, Junu, he seems to show up every time I get the ball in my hand. He got a good block for me and helped me to put it in his zone.
Floyd, I am ready to do something on this show. I'm ready to make a declaration. A.J. Brown should be the number one wide receiver of the Tennessee Titans. Take all of my eggs and put them in A.J.'s basket because I believe in A.J. Brown. If there was a sash that said number one wide receiver, I would have told Corey Davis at halftime, take that sash off and hand that over to AJ. AJ put on the number one wide receiver sash. And Corey played much better once AJ got going, which I am not surprised by because he's probably feeling the heat saying, wait a minute, I'm the 5th overall pick. This guy's the 51st overall pick, and this guy is bigger than me and better than me. And I'm not knocking Corey here because Corey had a nice game. But I am an AJ Brown believer, and I think that Mike Vrabel's got to go to Arthur Smith and say, hey, we got to treat AJ Brown like he's the guy here. In hopes that he becomes the guy. Because he's got the size. He's got the talent. I don't even know how he lasted to the 51st pick. But when they throw him the ball, good things happen. He's not on the field enough for me. They got Tajay Sharpe out there too much, which I'd just get rid of Tajay so you wouldn't have the want to ever have to play him. But A.J. Brown is the guy. And I think the Titans have got to start treating him as such. Your thoughts on A.J. Brown?
I mean, in the NFL, you don't treat anybody a certain way just because you think they earn the right to be treated that way. And Derek Mason, who was with us for, I want to say, 2, maybe 3 years before he became the number one guy.
But he became the number one guy in the span of like 6 games.
And Derek is you know, early in his career, has done every single thing that this guy has done. And I'm not taking anything away from A.J. Brown. I really like A.J. Brown. I mean, I think he's got a chance to be a legitimate receiver. I think we're so starved around here for a receiver that we're willing to make anybody that makes a play the number one guy, you know. And I think you have to look around the league and realize, you know, what you're talking about when you see some of these other receivers. And even though we didn't see it yesterday from Atlanta, mm-hmm. I mean, Atlanta's got, you know, a slew of players that would probably be number one receivers on any other team other than the one they're on with Jones. So, I mean, I think, I like I said, I really like AJ, but I mean, the truth is right now we don't have a number one receiver. That's why the ball's going everywhere.
That's why I've, you know, I agree. You know, there's not a guy who has stood out from the pack and has put their hands up and said, I'm the number one guy. But AJ has done enough in the four games to tell me, like Chris Sanders yesterday was kind of defending on the pregame show, was defending Corey Davis because he was saying he's not getting the ball enough to go out there and make plays. And I don't disagree with Chris saying that. Well, the way I'm looking at it is forget making sure Corey gets the ball. Make sure AJ gets the ball because AJ is more likely to make something big happen when he touches it. Make something big happen when he touches it more so than Corey Davis's.
Well, I don't know about all that.
Corey, AJ's got more big plays in his career than Corey does. Corey's got 2 years on him.
I know this. You take a guy like AJ, AJ has not sampled anything in the NFL from a coverage standpoint. I mean, you don't even know if he can get off the bump. I mean, we don't, because we haven't, wait till we play a team that has some legitimate corners and they get up on them. I mean, they are not going to let AJ do this on a weekly basis. Now, in a year from now, if we see AJ being doubled every week and people rolling the coverage to him and people playing combination coverages and him doing the same things, then I would probably agree with you, you know. But right now, playing a Tampa 2 team and, you know, running away from a middle linebacker, that's, I mean, that's all well and good. And I love it. I'm not, but that's not proof of anything in my mind.
I'm not saying that he's an all-pro right now. I'm just saying he is, in my opinion, most likely to be an all-pro of the wide receivers you have. I think he's the most talented guy they have at wide receiver.
Well, I think time will help us play that out.
I mean, look at that. He's so big, and he's so fast, and he runs with the ball like a deer when he catches it. Corey Davis doesn't do that. I'm not knocking Corey.
Did you see Corey on the 17-yard, the third and 15 or whatever?
That was a really nice play.
That was a great play. That's not a really nice play. That's a great play.
I'll take the guy who gets me 55-yard plays like Davis, like A.J. did last week and in week one. I mean, A.J. in two games has four big plays. Corey in 3 years has like two big plays.
Four big plays.
Two against Cleveland, two against Atlanta.
And we're basing all this discussion off of those four plays.
A.J. Brown leads the team with 223 yards. A.J. Brown is averaging 22.3 yards per reception. A.J. leads the team with two touchdown catches. A.J. has a catch of 55 yards. These are all things. A.J.'s averaging more yards per game than Corey Davis. A.J. Brown... at least, and I'm not saying he's there. I'm not saying he is a number one by NFL standards. Like, he's not Mike Evans. But, I think he's got a better chance to be a superstar than Corey Davis does. And so because of that, I want them to, they assume Corey is the number one wide receiver on this team. Well, I want them to stop assuming that and start assuming AJ is the number one wide receiver and that Corey Davis is the number two wide receiver.
I mean, again, they don't, none of the, all these things you're talking about, I mean, doesn't happen. You know, there's no assuming, there's no, the guy that gets open gets the ball. I mean, it's that simple. Now, at some point in time, if we have Julio Jones and he's beating double coverage, snap in and snap out, then we'll see that ball getting thrown in his direction regardless. But right now, I mean, four catches in a career is probably not enough to make a decision on.
Okay. So Floyd Reese, who, no offense, God bless him, you all know I love him. Floyd Reese, not the greatest wide receiver general manager in the history of the National Football League. But there is some, you know, Tyrone Calico was big, fast, and strong and caught a bunch of touchdown passes his rookie year. And we all know about Tyrone Calico's career.
And then he started getting beat up and never saw him again.
He stopped catching the ball, too. And yet, I'm here to say I am an A.J. Brown believer. He has, I believe in A.J. Brown. And the question for the callers is this: do you believe in A.J. Brown? Do you think A.J. Brown should be the Titans' number one wide receiver? 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Also coming up next, is the Falcons' win more than just one win? Is it something they can build on? We'll discuss. Jared and the GM, do not miss the pregame show. That's right. Start your morning off with the kickoff from 7 to 9:30 to get ready for Titans and Bills, followed by the pregame show featuring Jared and the GM and Chris Sanders live from the George Jones downtown 2nd Avenue Sunday, 9:30 to 11:30 prior to the Titans-Bills game. We hope to see everybody out there at the George Jones between 9:30 and 11:30. The pregame show is brought to you by Wholesale Inc., powered by RumbleOn.com, Kubota Tractors, your Middle Tennessee Kubota dealers, and Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House. Jared and the GM, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Where have you seen AJ maybe make his greatest stride since he became a full-time practice participant? And does he have more confidence than a lot of rookies that you see coming into a locker room?
He's caught a lot of, he's caught a lot of passes in the SEC. I think that, maybe some of his work down the field, has improved. He's got really good body control, for a big guy when the ball's in the air, being able to not mistime his jump or mistime the ball in the air, and just, I like the way he catches it, uses his hands. And it was good to see him, not run out of gas, yesterday.
That was Mike Vrabel on the Titans' new number one wide receiver, A.J. Brown. At least I hope that they keep throwing A.J. Brown the ball. At least give me this, Floyd. If we're not going to anoint A.J. as the number one wide receiver right now, in your opinion, A.J. Brown has definitely deserved more looks, more time, more hay. Let's get A.J. more involved in the game plan because of what A.J. has accomplished so far this year.
Well, I think without a doubt, and I think they will. I mean, they're not – unless this group is truly unique, they're not in the habit of finding guys that can make plays and deciding not to get the ball to them. I mean, most of the time that places I've been, if the guy can make plays, people want to get the ball to him. They want to give him the opportunity to do that. And so I would suspect he will get more opportunities.
Let's go to your phones. Let's start with Joe, who's up next on A.J. Brown. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Joe, what did you think about Mariota yesterday?
I think he played really well. I mean, I think it was definitely a big leap forward from the past 2 weeks. And one of the key things to his success was getting that ball out early, on time, in a position, anticipating where the receiver's going to be, which is what we've been saying all along, and look what happened. So, there you go. But as far as A.J. Brown goes, I'm going to say welcome, A.J. Brown, to the Tennessee Titans. Thank you for coming. And what a breath of fresh air, because I don't think back, Chris Sanders was about the only rookie that really came in and made an impact like that, and we haven't really seen that in a long time. So if he's going to be a number one receiver, I don't know if that's going to happen, but I do think what will happen is because of his talent and because of his production, it's going to elevate or push Corey Davis and a couple others to elevate their game as well. Because, I mean,
hey, thank you for your call. I'm totally with you. After Corey Davis dropped that pass yesterday, he looked like, hey, I need to step it up because if I don't, they're going to all fall in love with A.J. Brown. So I don't want to get lost in the shuffle here. And Corey had one of the better games he's had in a long time.
Yeah, I mean, they again, the passing game, this game, especially in the first half, I mean, this was as good as this offense has looked in a couple of years. I mean, they were legitimate. They're protecting the quarterback. The quarterback's getting back. The ball's coming out. He's putting it on the receivers. He's allowing them to run with it. The receivers are doing a good job of catching the ball and turning it up or running away from coverage or whatever the case may be. So, I mean, there were a ton of really, really positive things to come out of that whole first half.
Let's go to Savion, who's up next on A.J. Brown. Go ahead, Savion.
So, this is Savion.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, okay. Just going back to the question you and the GM had asked, do I believe in A.J. Brown? And I would just like to first and foremost and say I think he brings a different element to the game for the Titans, and I think he's an electric receiver that we've been looking for. I think he just needs to stay on the same path he's been on, you know. Hopefully him and Davis just glue together and hopefully he'll piece it together, you know, and have a great career.
So I think there's something to that. Savion, I think there's really something to what you just said, and that is if we anoint A.J. Brown as the number one wide receiver of the Titans and expect A.J. Brown to go have 100 yards every game and 55-yard touchdown passes, we're going to be disappointed with that. If we keep looking at it like, hey, this week it was A.J. and Corey, next week it'll be Delaney, the next week it'll be Humphreys, the next week it'll be Sharp, the next week it'll be A.J., the next week it'll be Corey. If we look at it like that, then there's a chance A.J. Brown fits in and has a pretty nice role with this team as a wide receiver.
And you would like to think, I mean, we've got a tight end that's a pretty good receiver, and we got a slot that's a pretty good receiver. The thing we haven't had is we haven't had consistency from the outside guys.
Mm-hmm.
So if these can be outside guys and be consistent, I mean, we know the tight end, we know the slot can make plays. Well, now you're turning into an offense where you've got, you know, weapons everywhere. You've got a chance to really, really, if you can protect the quarterback, you've got a chance to be really, really productive.
Also, by the way, I just want to shout this out for the people in the back that missed this. A.J. Brown's two touchdowns for a rookie receiver are the first time a Titans/Oilers receiver as a rookie has had two touchdown catches since Chris Sanders in 1995.
I'm sure we'll hear about that Wednesday.
Oh, yes, we will. Considering that Chris texted me at 2:03 to relay that information, I'm pretty sure we will hear about that
on
Wednesday.
And you know what's fun is, if you this down,
I'm stunned he waited
his
at 2:03.
Rookie year, whenever, however long ago it was, if you say how long were they and who they were against, he would have them both down. Oh, 67-yarders against Cincinnati, and then I had a 45-yarder. I mean, he'll know exactly.
By the way, Chris Sanders coming up on the 25th anniversary of his rookie season. But don't tell him that.
Wow.
Let's go to...
Still looks good, though.
I mean, it looks like it's more of like a 5-year anniversary than 25. Yeah. Ben is a Falcons fan. He's up next on Matt Ryan. Go ahead, Ben.
First of all, thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
I want to comment on Matt Ryan and how we really feel as Falcon fans. Now, I have watched him blow too many games. We built two teams around him, first being Tony Gonzalez, Hall of Fame running back, Hall of Fame wide receivers. And now, you know, we built another team. He got Smith fired. He's going to get this coach fired. We Falcon fans feel like Matt Ryan absolutely sucks.
Did you feel that way when he was league MVP and taking you all to the Super Bowl?
We feel that way because he's had the opportunity, and I can think of 30 quarterbacks, if they've got you down, I don't care who it's against, if they've got you down 24-3 at halftime, they can finish. Matt Ryan is not one of them. That's the way we feel in Atlanta. So I'll gladly take Mariota over him any day.
I mean, I would have, thank you for your call, Ben. I would have taken him over Matt Ryan yesterday, but that may be the only day that I would ever take Marcus over Matt Ryan. And I'll say this. Matt Ryan certainly did look to be part of the problem yesterday. If not, he's definitely not the solution right now for Atlanta. But the Falcons just look like a mess.
Well, it's, and this is a great example of just what we're talking about. You know, I mean, here, like he said, and I hadn't thought about it this long because I haven't paid that much attention. But, you know, they put together two teams around him. I mean, when they had Gonzalez and we had
Roddy White.
Oh, man, they were for real. And then this is the second one, and who knows where this one's going.
In all fairness to Matt, and this may be actually a, you know, anti-Matt thing, he got you as close to a Super Bowl to winning it as you can possibly get.
Right, but this boils down to the quarterback question again.
Can Matt get him back there and win a game? I don't think Matt's ever going to get him back there.
How many years has he been a quarterback?
Like 10, 11?
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, I'll raise my hand. I do not think Matt Ryan is going back to the Super Bowl.
10 years he's been the quarterback, obviously the franchise quarterback, and you've been to one Super Bowl. And how many playoffs? You know, I mean, it's not like they're locked for the playoffs every year. You know, they've been in and out and in and out and in and out. And so, you know, what is it you're looking for?
Although, you know, Matt Ryan will look at you and say, screw you, I got to compete against Drew Brees, who's won an MVP, Cam Newton's won an MVP.
Yep.
You know, like.
And that's what, and we talked about this before. That's why you can put together a really, really good team. And yet, if you're playing against, you know, the New England Patriots and their decade-long dominance, then guess what? You're probably not going to ever win it.
I think Matt learned that the hard way.
And if you're lucky enough to get into a decade where you're, you know, having to go out and beat somebody that is beatable, or a series of teams that is beatable, then you're lucky enough to be a Joe Flacco and win one, or you're lucky enough to be a Trent Dilfer and win one. You know, and have that on your resume.
Back to your phones next. 615-737-1025, plus some other news around the NFL. We'll get to all that coming up. Jared and the GM, it's ESPN 1025, the game.
Was it a handshake with Taylor, an embrace, nothing?
He demanded a hug, and it was a quick one. But, you know, we're back in business, and he's back ready to work and help the team, and we got to get him ready to play.
That was Vrabel today. Taylor Lewan back to the Titans. He will be active and ready to go on Sunday. Vrabel asked about it today, says Lewan left tackle. He said Dennis Kelly, meanwhile, will go back to right tackle, or will be going back to where he was in the offseason program, which was competing for right tackle, which I found to be a little interesting because competing for right tackle, generally speaking, means he's competing for the starting job. So, Floyd, do you think Kelly is competing with Conklin for the starting right tackle job?
No, I don't.
I was saying with Coach.
I think it's, he's and Kelly filled in and, you know, for the most part, you'd probably have to say filled in admirably.
Kelly has never not done a good job filling in for the Titans.
He reminds me, we had a backup tackle that we had gotten from Indy, who reminds me so much of him. Jason Matthews, remember Jason?
Yep.
Who's now a coach and teacher here in the area. But he was one of those guys that was, had been a starter, had played at Indy, and then whatever reason, things changed. And we were able to pick him up as a backup tackle. And whenever, you never want to lose a starting tackle. I'm not saying that. But if, in fact, Jason had to go into the game and play for a game or for a, never a fear ever. I mean, he was just, it was one of the great soothing things you could ever hope for in a game where you've got a backup tackle that's good enough. You can go in there and play and you're not scared to death. Your quarterback's going to get killed.
Let's go to your phones here on Jared and the GM. By the way, the impact of Lewan, we'll get into that later in the week. I think it's going to be humongous for the Titans going forward. you know, after this. Let's go to JD, who's up next on AJ Brown and Nate Davis. Go ahead, JD.
Yo, what's up, Jared, Floyd? This is the first time I've called in. So, but I want to let you know, Jared, AJ Brown, he, like you said earlier, he does have the size, man. He's, I was able to watch him at one of the practices on the sideline and got to shake his hand. And, you know, he has really strong hands. He's going to be a great receiver for us. But like Floyd touched on earlier, that offensive line, and once I realized that Nate Davis was in the game, I had to stop and record and watch if number 64 was in there. I told my wife, I said, you know, what would sell me on Nate Davis if he goes in here and shows aggression? And he did. I think for the most part, he went in there and he showed that he's tough, and I hope he can still sit there and, you know, be a good starting guard for us. And maybe it's good with Kelly, you know, going back over there and showing some competition with Coughlin, because, you know, I don't know if him cutting some weight this year has, you know, kind of made him not be able to defend the right side as much as he did last year. But, you know, he's showing that he might need some help over there. Nate Davis did a good job helping him, which it should be the other way around. So maybe Kelly will bring some competition and, you know, get him in the right mindset. I appreciate you taking my call. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, JD.
Thanks, JD. He brought up a good point about the Davis kid, because he, you know, we really haven't paid a great deal of attention. And it was interesting that he mentioned the aggression. And I was wondering, Vrabel had something to say during press when he was describing him and said, you know, we wanted to see him hit guys. He said he didn't always hit the right guy, but he did hit him, you know, which to me meant I could see that aggression, just figuring, hey, I'm going to go out here and hit somebody. I don't know who I'm hitting, you know, right now. I'm not real clear if I should hit that guy or this guy, so I'm choosing this guy and I'm going to hit him. So
well, it's kind of like it's like the roughing the passer Landry got yesterday. It's like, you know, hey, I'm going to go hit the quarterback, and you know, maybe I hit him a second too late, square in the chest, but I'm going to hit him. So there you go.
Yeah.
Let's go to Terrence, who's up next on Marcus Mariota. Go ahead, Terrence.
Yes, I just want to comment on how good Marcus played yesterday, and it was a big difference between this game and the Jacksonville game last week. Yesterday, you see a three-step drop, 3 seconds, the ball was gone. He used to shake down. And the thing I liked about it, on that one play where Vic Beasley, like, clearly was getting ready to sack him, and you see him slide up, and the pocket's like his pocket awareness was way better yesterday. So I just want to see what you guys think about that.
Thank you for the call. What did you think about the use of the checkdowns and the poise? And you know, was that all offensive line pass protection related, or was some of that Marcus, you know, getting better at some of the things that he struggled with?
Well, no, I think it was all offensive line, you know, oriented, from the standpoint that he felt secure for whatever reason. And I don't know what made this game so different from some of the others. I don't know how it went that way. But as the game went on, he was more and more confident. And I agree with the caller. I mean, there were two or three times where he stepped up, looked like Tom Brady to me. That's what it reminded me of. Because Tom will step up in the pocket exactly the same way. The ball will come out exactly the same way. And they're off and running. So, I mean, I thought it was really, really well done. And it's been a while since we've had a pocket that clean for that long. And it was funny because even on the other side of the ball, like our pass rush, early in the game, we had no pass rush.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we were covering them. Then as the game went on, all of a sudden we continued to cover, and that was good. But now the rush started coming, and we ended up getting, five sacks, I think.
So. Yeah, I mean, they got pressure, but it didn't feel like they were pressuring Ryan the whole game. I mean, it really felt like Ryan could do whatever he wanted to, and then they get to the Titan 35, and they would just go brain dead out there.
Well, he would.
That tells me there's a coaching issue.
They were doing the same thing, you know, which was the tight end was open, and they'd keep a drive alive by getting it to the tight end, and you know, but the outside guys were the guys to me that were just, because they're the big play guys, and they just shut those guys down.
Ramal on Twitter says, I'd like to say the Titans defense played a great game. With them stopping 3 4th-and-1s, won the Titans the game. Other than that, second half, Titans lose. I'm mad that the Titans are pretty much in command the entire second half.
Yeah, I mean, I know what he's saying, though. The offense didn't show as much, but the offense didn't have to show as much. And I think, you know, and I'm not sure how much of this was by design. I know early in the second half it was not by design. But later on in the half, you know, just feeding the ball to Henry and letting him run with it and, you know, trying to get first downs, eat up the clock and get going. But early in the second half, we didn't get a great deal done. And yet they didn't either. And that was the key. And you're right. Now, I'll say this. The fourth and ones or fourth and whatevers, I mean, three of those, they're outstanding. If you can stop somebody on fourth down like that, you are really doing something.
Something we'll keep up with all throughout the week. Josh Allen, the quarterback for the Bills, is questionable. He's in the concussion protocol. I'm going to guess we probably won't know until Friday whether or not Allen's going to play. I mean, and the hit he took was vicious against New England. So I wonder if it'll be him or Matt Barkley.
I read an article this morning where they were talking about the length of time missed because of concussions. And it used to be like 2 days and then went to 3 days. And there he said it was up to 8 days. Now, I have no idea if it's, you know, the same. But
so we'll keep an eye on that.
Yeah.
Monday Night Football tonight. Worst matchup ever. 0-3 Bengals, 0-3 Steelers. And I was sitting there when they kept showing promos and Monday Night Football, Bengals and Steelers. I was like, ugh, gross. But this game does matter to this show. Because if the Bengals finish 5-11 or worse, Floyd owes me
$100.
$100. So I would like to say, go Steelers. By the way, I was at Preds Fest yesterday. Great event out there at Preds Fest. But it was cool. Like, all the players were out there signing autographs and all kinds of stuff and met a lot of fans of the show. And the Predators today announced that they're going to send down or they're going to place on waivers Mika Salamaki and Steve Santini. So Santini obviously didn't make it very long after the PK trade. But I'm glad to see Salamaki gone. And with that, Preds Insiders is next. We'll see you, Jared, in the GM.